Welcome to the Devils and Details radio show. Thank you once again. My name is Wyme Russell, and thank you for listening here on SkidRowStudios.com. I am glad to have you here on this Friday with us. I am honored to be in the company of Mr. Nestor Rodriguez.
Yay, yay.
How's it going, man?
Good. First of all, before we begin, man, I just want to comment on that dope-ass, hip-hop-esque track.
You like that?
Oh, man, that shit was off the hook.
Well, they couldn't hear that, so they don't know what we're talking about.
Oh, no, they could hear it.
Oh, they got it.
Oh, yeah, that was the dope shit.
That was a good one.
Dope-alicious.
Yes, today we have some interesting things occurring here in the studio, so if we are... A bit befuddled. Please, we apologize for
but
that.
But I'm always befuddled anyway, so
me
don't
too.
No one can tell.
As long as we don't leave the listeners befuddled. So,
yeah.
On this show, we have some very critical information, very important information for you. Today, we're asking you to have an open mind because the information we share is earth-shattering to anyone who has not heard it. Today, we respectfully... We are respectfully discussing the Oklahoma City bombing by way of a documentary film, A Noble Lie, directed by James Lane. We will also be covering the OKBIC, or Oklahoma Bombing Investigation Committee investigations, as mentioned in the film. This was an independent investigation into the bombing that our government didn't want to further. So there was a federal investigation, but no congressional investigation into the matter. We will also go over just a few of the many coincidences between Oklahoma City and the events of 9/11. This is needed to hear information for everyone, not only the people who question the official versions of the events. We mean no disrespect to the victims or victims' families. We are on your side, and sharing this information today may help bring to light evidence and key information that has been hidden for over 17 years. You can always call into the show, 1-800-893-9562. We welcome any comments. I know this information will not be easy for some to take. But again, approach this subject with an open mind, and please, let's ask him a few questions, Nestor. So here we go. So or let me ask in the first person. So does my government always tell me the truth? You have to ask yourself that. And we urge our listeners today, before we, you know, prefacing this show, to ask themselves, has the government ever done anything to deceive me for their own gain? So you have to ask yourself that as well. Today we just may
also you have to ask yourself, have you taken all of your daily vitamins and minerals?
As long as you don't take the Disney vitamins, you're okay.
Right. All right. Disney was.
Okay. So, Nestor, with what you know about 9/11 and the good old Operation Northwoods, I know you've been looking at this information. What do you initially think of the Oklahoma City bombing?
Well, before you go into that, sure. I think it's important to reiterate the Northwoods stuff because people may have not listened to the prior episode. So why don't you, before you ask me that question, just... loosely.
Well, Northwoods was a false flag developed by our government.
Kick it.
Although it wasn't actually orchestrated, it was designed by our Joint Chief Chairman and actually sent all the way to the levels of the president to create a false flag to bring us to war with Cuba or to have us intercede.
Basically, they wanted to create some sort of a ruckus, for lack of a better word, so it would look like Cuba had started some shit with us.
Right.
So we created it. Or this was a document that said, this is what we propose, to create this ruckus so that Cuba looks like they attacked us, and then we are justified to go in there and do what we want to do.
And there was various levels of homegrown terror or self-inflicted terrorism.
And this is factual. You can look this up. This is an actual document that has appeared, that was written in the 60s, and it has appeared. So it's not hearsay. It's an actual government document.
Sure. Now,
Northwoods.
The Oklahoma City bombing was the largest homegrown terrorist act in American history. It still is the homegrown act. Could this not be a false flag like Northwoods? I would like to question that today. What do you think, Nestor? Is it possible?
Is it possible? I mean, come on. Anything is possible. And just discussing that Northwoods thing, if there is an actual document that pretty much illustrates that certain people in the government are saying, let's do this so that the American people buy this illusion so that we can do that. That's what the document is saying.
Right.
If that document exists, then... anything is possible.
That's true.
Anything is possible.
You're right, man.
You can create any kind of conflict in order to justify an action that you're doing to make the American people think that we're doing this because he or they did this to us.
Okay. All right. Well, you have a firm grasp on Northwoods and the false flag situations as well, or the ability of our government to fool
us. Hopefully, I didn't go too far out to answer your question. No, yes, anything is possible.
You're good. So let's start with A Noble Lie. It's a multi-award-winning film, a documentary film produced by Free Mind Films and We Are Change Oklahoma. It was directed by James Lane and released in 2011. The film renewed the independent investigations into the April 19, 1995 bombing of the Alfred P. Murrow Federal Building in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. The film outlines many ignored facts in the case, including evidence that the jury of Timothy McVeigh did not have access to review. Many of these facts point to our government potentially having prior knowledge and or complicity in the planning, construction, and placement of multiple above military grade explosives at the Murrow Building. James Lane and his crew prove this official investigation is wrought with signs of cover-up, misinformation, including deliberate evidence tampering, and or destruction. So a lot of evidence issues there. The independent investigations uncovered facts that FBI agents were posing as neo-Nazis, helping McVeigh plan, construct, and deliver the bomb. Through all of this, McVeigh did acknowledge to his attorneys that during the bombing, he was working for the U.S. government. So that's interesting stuff there. Interesting fact on McVeigh's death certificate, his employer was noted as the U.S. Army. What do you think about that?
Well, that's interesting.
Why would that be?
Interesting because he was in the Army.
Right.
But he wasn't currently employed in the Army when all this stuff happened.
He had left. He only served in the Army for a couple of years. He got an honorable discharge in the Army and was planning to go on to Special Forces, which we'll talk about later.
Right.
Which
he actually had a few commendations.
He did.
He was a decorated serviceman. Yeah.
He was. Mm-hmm. He was. And he did see fighting service. So he did see war in the first Gulf War, and he saw actually a lot of action. His unit saw most of the action in that war. So let's keep going here. So all of the evidence, of course, is ignored by all of those who choose to believe the official story. So everything we're going to go through now is completely ignored by the mainstream media and anybody who just basically thinks that our government wouldn't do that to themselves. But so let's go ahead. Let's look at the official story. Of the bombing on April 19, 1995 at 9:02 a.m., a truck bomb was parked and detonated outside of the Alfred P. Murrow Federal Building in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, of course. The blast claimed 168 lives, including 19 children under the age of 6. The Ryder truck was driven by a troubled veteran of the first Gulf War. This is alleged, of course. Mr. Timothy McVeigh, he and his ex-Army mates Terry Nichols and Michael Fortier would plan, build, and detonate a large ANFO bomb to retaliate against the federal government's handling of the Patriot movement and the Waco siege on David Koresh and the Branch Davidians. So the trial would last 3 weeks, and the jury deliberated under 24 hours to find McVeigh and Nichols the sole perpetrators and sentenced McVeigh to death and Terry Nichols to life in prison. McVeigh was put to death in June 2001, just a few months prior to 9/11. Interesting thing, when you investigate 9/11, you always want to look at the people in charge of the government, around that time, and the year maybe leading up to it.
Right.
And this is interesting information that he was put to death the June before the event, possibly causing some sort of media, smoke and mirrors kind of situation.
Right.
Look at this instead
Switch
of this.
Switch and bait.
Right.
Three-card Monty action.
Sure. As a result of the bombing, the U.S. government passed the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act of 1996, which tightened the standards for habeas corpus in the United States, as well as legislation designed to increase the protection around federal buildings. So it was a death blow to our rights under habeas corpus, or being brought before a judge when we're accused of a crime. Mm-hmm. They wanted to limit those powers for some reason. And, of course, the power to appeal once we've been convicted of a crime. So all of that applies to habeas corpus. And that was kind of rewritten as a result of this bombing.
Give us a little loose interpretation of habeas corpus.
Habeas corpus is a legal action which requires a person under arrest to be brought before a judge or into court. That ensures that a prisoner can be released from unlawful detention. That is detention lacking sufficient cause or evidence.
So
it's all about
you have the right
your
to be
right
brought,
to mm-hmm. be brought to a judge.
To a judge.
And be represented.
So the judge could say, yeah, you do have enough evidence to hold this guy, or no. Let him go.
That's correct. A noble lie starts by reminding us of the first APB issued short. Now, let me just preface again that this isn't a chronological account of the event. I know we do that. We go chronologically through the events. But this is actually an accounting of the film. So we're just basically talking about the information as provided in kind of a loose order of what they provided in the film. So we're going to kind of be jumping back and forth. So a noble lie starts by reminding us of the first APB issued shortly after the bombing was for two Middle Eastern-looking men in a brown truck. That would soon be rescinded and the largest manhunt in U.S. history would begin for Timothy McVeigh and John Doe number two.
They were looking for two Middle Eastern men.
In the very beginning, yes. It wasn't McVeigh and another gentleman in a hat.
That's racist,
it was
though,
two
man.
Middle Eastern like, men why, in a why, brown truck. Yeah, well, they were actually seen.
They were at, two Middle Eastern men
yes,
were seen?
Yes.
What, in going into a federal building or with a truck bomb?
In the very beginning of events like this, the local authorities have control over the situation. So
right.
When they get calls, I mean, there's honest citizens calling their,
sure,
the
sure.
honest authorities, the
sure.
sheriff in the town.
We got two towel
right.
heads.
And they look
kind of suspicious. There's no Indian right. restaurants in this neighborhood. I don't know. Can we investigate that? Okay, we're going to be right on it.
Exactly. And so we get an APB for two Middle Eastern looking gentlemen in a brown truck. And
that's racist. In a brown truck?
It was a brown truck.
Unbelievable.
Come on.
Hold on. Was that the actual color of the truck that,
it was.
That Timothy McVeigh was actually accused
fact,
of?
Interesting sidebar. When they found this truck, it was actually spray painted yellow. So to hide the brown. So
oh, okay.
No, if you don't got like it. Brown, maybe you like yellow.
Got it.
The film relives eyewitness accounts of the event. Jane Graham, bombing survivor, a very interesting lady in the film, who worked in the building, testified to the fact that she saw men placing what looked like gray sticks of butter on the columns in the parking garage with wires. She also testifies to the fact that she saw the ATF standing outside of the building hours before the bombing. A lot of the witnesses do say that they saw certain preparations of the ATF and FBI assembling them prior to the bombing hours before. That many eyewitnesses account to reveal the government's possible prior knowledge of the bombing, that the ATF were not in their offices during the bombing, nor any of their children's in the daycare area. Now, this was McVeigh's hit on the ATF headquarters in Oklahoma City. Why weren't any of the ATF people killed or their children killed in the daycare area? Because that is where most of the deaths occurred, was in the daycare area. What do you think, Nestor?
So far, it sounds like there's...
Why wouldn't ATF be hit if this was where their headquarters were? How were they not in their offices that day?
Of course, come on. That's crazy. But I think there's a report of maybe one or two dudes that were actually in the office, yeah?
Okay. There are two accounts.
Two accounts, right. Yeah.
And one of them is that the gentleman or the ATF agent was in the elevator.
Right.
And he free fell from floor 8 to floor 2 or something
right.
like that.
Right.
When the elevator technicians or the elevator experts got in, this is covered in the film.
Right.
When they got to those elevators,
uh-huh.
they noticed that there was no free fall condition or anybody stuck in the elevators. So, there was possibly people in the elevators, but they actually closed and the walls crashed in before people were able to get into these elevators. So there was nobody stuck in the elevators,
right.
and there was never any free fall conditions. So
right.
that agent
meaning
was
that
telling
they,
a story.
Got it. So meaning there were no pits technically, so that somebody could fall into it and fall down.
I guess something has to be triggered in an elevator in order for it to just fall down.
Got it. Or be in the elevator and then the pulley system snapping and then
drastic.
Got it.
Amazing enough, the damage that was done to that building, the elevators didn't free fall. So there's testimony
right.
to elevators.
So basically, whatever the ATF agent said that they free fall is questionable.
Something's up.
Got it.
The other guy said that he used his karate skills to chop through a wall, yet he's seen on videotape that day to rescue people, of course.
Was that guy Asian by any chance?
I don't know. He had long hair in the videotape. He's clearly seen shaking somebody's hand, and there was no injury to his hand.
Oh, okay.
So very questionable events, but you're right. There's two ATF agents that are trying to claim they were in the building.
Well, I was going to tie in the yellow truck with the karate chop, but I guess that's not appropriate right now.
Well, you never know. So the ATF were not in their offices during the bombing. There were many eyewitnesses' accounts that revealed the the government's possible prior knowledge of the bombing. One such story is Senator Istook. What's interesting in Oklahoma City bombing is that there's all the high levels of government are all represented, you know, as having many questions or questions about their testimony. But Senator Istook of Oklahoma stated to a police officer, David Kochendorfer, this is in the film, of course,
right,
in the rubble, that he knew this was going to happen. That he was aware of bomb threats in the building, yet the parents of the children and workers killed were not told of any impending threat. So the government knew that there was a specific threat to federal buildings actually on that day.
Well, if you know of a threat, I mean, it's almost like in schools, whenever there's emergency drills, they do those drills in the event that there's a threat. In the event that there's a threat, obviously someone's going to say, yo, there's a threat, evacuate.
Right.
Which makes... It's crazy.
Well, they need victims, just like in 9/11. Notice the time this is happening. It's always on a work day.
Yeah, yeah.
When people have just assembled into work.
Early in the morning.
Right.
It's unbelievable. If I was working at a federal building, I'd still be cracked the fuck out and probably be stumbling in around 9. I probably wouldn't wake up till like about noon. By that point, it'd be done. It'd be a wrap for me.
Right. Let's just say your laziness would have saved your life that day.
No, because I would have been in there. I'm just saying I'd be in the office and I'd just be like, what?
Oh, I see.
Yeah, okay.
Senator Istook denied the allegations of prior knowledge, but refuses to take a polygraph test on the matter. So that's kind of questionable. J.D. Reed, a county appraiser, saw the bomb disposal unit parked outside the courthouse prior to the bombing. Another witness
now,
account.
Now this is because did you mention this or is this relevant right now?
What do we got?
That there were actually two other bombs, the undetonated bombs in the building.
We're gonna get to the undetonated bombs,
but there's a detonating truck outside.
Yes. And the bomb squad was actually seen a number of times. And we'll play a clip to that. Hopefully, if our clips are going here There was a lot of people seen around these bomb trucks and
wow,
so
wow.
Who knows what's going on?
I wasn't educated on that.
Well, here we go. So another witness, Dan Browning, Oklahoma City Police Department, stated that he saw the rarely used equine or horse squad getting mounted up hours before the bombing. So, you know, crowd control, you know, the cops on the horses, they rarely use that. And they were mounting up that morning prior to the bombing. So what do you think? What do you think, man? What do you think about pre-knowledge? What do you think about governments having warnings and not sharing them with people who could potentially be victims?
Well, that's
warnings.
All fishy stuff, man. I mean, you know, fishy. I mean, either the government is that good and they're prepared, that ready,
right,
just in case, or there's some serious synchronicity going on.
Something's going on, yeah.
Or there's some conspiracy.
Right. I would have to imagine so. Now let's just check out one of our clips here. Let's see how well these are doing.
See
here.
How well they come out.
Yeah, here is the clip of 2020 did a story about the prior knowledge, and so this is a pretty,
oh really?
Yeah. So let's we have a little piece from the film, their 2020 clip. So let's give it a listen.
At issue increasingly for some of the victims and their families, what did authorities know or suspect before the explosion that federal workers and the children arriving at the Murrow Building did not know or were not told?
There was this fairly large truck with a trailer behind it, and it had a shield on the side of the door, and it said bomb disposal or bomb squad below it.
Authorities now claim in federal investigative reports that the huge, ominous truck with its trailer was being used by a deputy to run routine errands. Other documents obtained by 2020 show that someone called the executive secretariat's office at the Justice Department in Washington and said the Murrow Building had been bombed. But this was 24 minutes before the blast. No action was apparently taken.
So that's pretty scary information. A lot of that is very reminiscent to 9/11, where we got pre-information of the building collapse, pre-information of a bomb exploding, you know, amazing information.
Or so at least tales of other bombs going off before the actual attacks.
Yes.
Which we're going to get into, I hope.
Sure. Yeah. This clip, the clip from 2020 never had a follow-up. So that story, they never did a follow-up by intervention of the Justice Department. So the producers actually got intervened from going forward on that story. The film then moves to Who is John Doe Number 2? So they move from the eyewitness accounts to Who is John Doe Number 2, which was a major issue that day, or you know, certainly the largest manhunt in the American history. The first APB was for two Middle Eastern looking men in a brown pickup. Many eyewitnesses placed more than one person in the Ryder truck. We all know the bombing occurred by way of a Ryder truck. Witness Mike Nations explains he over, which is another.
Did you say Ryder? Like R-I-R-Y-D-E-R?
It was a Ryder. It was a big yellow Ryder truck.
But it was brown before that.
No,
painted yellow?
No. This was the first APB were two guys in a brown pickup truck.
Got it.
Speeding
got
away.
It. Got it.
So, okay. So the witness, Mike Nations, who's interesting in the film, explains he overheard a conversation between McVeigh and John Doe number two and an unknown person on a telephone. McVeigh reported to John Doe number two that they were supposed to stay there and stay put. So this gentleman, Mike Nations, overheard the conversation between Timothy McVeigh and the John Doe number two and an unknown person on a phone, and the message was to stay put. So whatever they were doing was they were doing it correctly. The government abandoned the search for John Doe number two, which is questionable, which was the largest manhunt in U.S. history, and he was never found and erased from history, and nobody seems to care about old John Doe number two now, which is very questionable. Now, Bill Clinton put the FBI in charge of the entire investigation. And remember, this was a Bill Clinton-era false flag. He put the FBI in charge of the investigation, prompting even more questions from local officials. Many investigators... evidence was turned away if it didn't fit into Janet Reno or the FBI's account of what happened. So they would get a lot of this information, and it just wasn't going into the report because the FBI and Janet Reno says, no, we're not going to answer any of those questions. What do you think about covering up? Janet Reno, again, your friend.
Oh, yeah, that's my friend, Janet R-E-N-O.
She was a major troublemaker, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she was an ugly fuck, that's for sure. Whether she
had a strange shaking problem.
Yeah.
I don't know what that was.
I met her. She was actually very nice. Mm-hmm. She only had about 10 minutes for a photo op.
Okay.
So you had to get it in and out. I was assisting a friend of mine who was a photojournalist. She's very tall, I'll tell you that much.
Wow.
So if she was to change a bulb on the on one of the higher floors of that federal building, she'd be the right person to do it.
Well, very good. Well, then she has a new job then. I mean, let's give her that
well,
one.
Well, she would have had a job. I don't know what she's doing now.
Okay, well, she should be changing light bulbs.
Yeah.
So let's continue forward here. The government gathered, this is interesting, 1,034 fingerprints in the investigation, but did not run them through the National Fingerprint Database.
Wow.
Why would you go to the effort of fingerprinting 1,034 people and not running them through the database?
Mm.
This was potentially all the neo-Nazis and stuff that they were investigating.
Right,
that
they were investigating
McVeigh.
In the first place.
Sure,
right.
Sure. And Nikki Deutschman, jury foreperson of the federal trial for Terry Nichols, states the government may have dropped the ball. Let's play Nikki Deutschman's words. She was the foreperson of the federal trial for Terry Nichols.
I think that the government perhaps really dropped the ball. I think that there were a large number of sightings right around before the week before and the days and months after the bombing, and sketches of people that were recognizable. In this trial, there even was a photograph of someone who may have been involved with mixing the bomb, with putting the bomb together. And that person, it was a photograph from a newspaper. Obviously, that person's identity is known. I think there are other people out there, and decisions were probably made very early on that Tim McVeigh and Terry Nichols were who they were looking for, and the same sort of resources were not used to try to find out who else might be involved.
So the film goes on to prove that the story changed from the opening moments of the bombing through the first days of the investigation. This is proven by news reports of multiple bombs in the building that later disappeared from public record and have become conspiracy theories as far as the federal government is concerned. So check out this news clip of additional bombs being found in the building the morning of the bombing.
The news channel has learned of another strange development. Apparently, before the bombing, Governor Frank Keating's brother...
Pardon me, that was the incorrect clip. Here's the news clip.
The police and emergency crews are talking about moving us back because of the danger of a possibility of another explosion.
I think he said another bomb.
Another bomb, move back.
Oh my God, another bomb.
The
the fire crews and the various emergency crews are trying to get in, but we keep getting reports that there may be other devices in the area.
And they will use that that trailer. You see the bucket on the back there, sort of this is how they would transport the explosive device away from this populated area to try to do something with it.
There were two unexploded devices discovered subsequent to the initial explosion.
A second bomb was found on the east side of that building. A bomb squad is on the scene. That second bomb has not exploded. We don't know quite the status yet if they've managed to defuse it, but it has been confirmed.
There have been reports of two explosive devices, unexploded explosive devices.
Two different explosive devices were found in addition to the one that went off.
Just an hour after the initial explosion, downtown Oklahoma City was shaken up again with word of another bomb, or maybe two.
They've had to back off a couple times because they found, I guess, two or three other bombs or at least explosive devices down there that they've had to defuse.
Now, one of the voices you hear there is Governor Frank Keating, who had a deep FBI ATF background and actually got a huge promotion shortly after the bombing, which is another 9/11 earmark. I urge you to watch the film. It's mind-boggling. You got to see this information firsthand. Very interesting and bizarre fact about Frank Keating. He was the governor of Oklahoma, had a brother named Martin. Martin Keating wrote a book about a homegrown terrorist named Tom McVeigh, who bombs the Oklahoma Federal Building using a truck. He's then caught speeding without a valid license plate and is taken into custody. Now, that was the clip I just played by mistake. But listen to the announcement of this book by the governor's brother, Martin.
The news channel has learned of another strange development. Apparently, before the bombing, Governor Frank Keating's brother, Mark, had been working on a novel about a terrorist bombing in Oklahoma City. Stranger still, one of the characters in the novel was named Thomas McVeigh.
So it gets cut off. It's a real short clip. But one of the characters in the novel is Thomas McVeigh. So that is the official story to a T. McVeigh was even caught speeding without a license plate when he was taken into custody. Martin Keating wrote that book in 1991. The bombing didn't happen until 1995. So, Nestor, how does that happen? And is that a major smoking gun that this governor's brother wrote a book, which is almost the official story of the bombing to a T, and it's ignored? And they had deep ties, intelligence ties, both of these two brothers.
You know, I think it's pretty deep. You know what I mean?
It's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of that. You know, I can go either way on that particular thing.
Do you think it might have been just a coincidence?
I don't know. I don't necessarily believe in coincidences per se.
Okay.
I don't. I believe in synchronicity and maybe, you know, things having... I don't know, but I don't believe in coincidences, but I don't really, you know. Okay. How I feel about that.
All right. Both Keatings have been involved in the FBI and at various levels in the intelligence business. I urge you to take a look at both Keatings. An interesting person in this film, which you'll like, is Hoppy Heidelberg. Now, this is an animated gentleman from Texas. He's a Texan, a member of the McVeigh's federal grand jury. Heidelberg was released from the grand jury when,
he's a member of what?
Pardon me. I said Hoppy Heidelberg is a Texan. I'm on the wrong show. Hoppy Heidelberg would be an Oklahoman, from Oklahoma, obviously. Pardon me.
Was he, he was one of Tim McVeigh's cronies?
No.
Okay.
Hoppy Heidelberg was a member of McVeigh's federal grand jury.
Got
right.
It.
So Heidelberg was released from the grand jury. He was released, so they kicked him out. When he requested the jurors have the ability to call witnesses, they gave him a juror handbook, and he went through that. He actually read it.
Right.
And he said
the only guy who read it that day.
Basically. Yeah. And he learned that he could call witnesses and ask for specific information if it hasn't already been
guys.
Presented.
Prospective jurors out there in America, just hear the cliff notes. Right. If you're selected as a juror, you can ask for witnesses and more information. Bam, who knew?
Well, definitely in this grand jury situation,
grand jury.
What Mr. Heidelberg understood, and he was correct, he was also requesting video and photographic evidence of the bombing, video that would show clearly the bomb exploding in the truck and McVeigh getting out and would back up the official story, but the jurors were never allowed to access any of it.
Right.
Just like 9/11.
Which wouldn't make any sense.
Another earmark. Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't make any sense because to come to some sort of a legal conclusion, it would be helpful, if not imperative and or pertinent to look at actual photos of sure. the bomb site,
well, of
maybe
course.
Floor plans of
or
how
a
the
video,
build, something.
Yeah. Or video of the bomb being placed there, McVeigh
Whatever.
Walking away,
something.
The sole bomber
yeah,
theory.
Yeah.
Show us.
Right.
Show us the Pentagon. Show
please,
us any of it.
Please, please let me see.
I hope they listen. So let's see. The last trial, Heidelberg was released from the jury and subsequently visited and investigated himself by the FBI.
Huh.
So there you go.
Huh.
Good old Hoppy Heidelberg. Learn about him. He's a great guy. The trial lasted 3 weeks and the jury deliberated for under 24 hours, returning a guilty verdict for McVeigh. He was sentenced to death and was executed June 11, 2001. Nichols was later found guilty, who was his partner. Alleged partner in the crime, and received a life sentence.
Yeah,
there was a
Nichols.
Third gentleman, Michael Fortier, who turned a federal witness, so he kind of turned on both of them and was given 12 years and the witness relocation program once he was
right,
released.
Right, right.
So he got the cush
yeah.
situation.
Just so you know, Nichols was the guy in charge of getting hamburgers from the local fast food restaurant to keep Tim McVeigh alive and kind of like alert.
Keep him
Cause,
going.
Because, yeah, because when you're planning a bombing attack...
You get hungry?
It's very nervous. So you don't don't really eat, but you need to nourish yourself. So there's always a second guy that is in
bringing
charge
in
of
the food.
Bringing in nourishment.
I got you.
And the third dude that they gave him witness protection and they let
Michael
him go.
Michael Fortier.
He's the guy that was denied the fast food. They said, "Fuck you.
Yeah,
there's only enough food here for Tim.
Okay.
You ain't getting none."
And he got mad.
He got mad.
All
That's
right.
pretty much what happened
okay.
from my perspective.
I like it. I like your. You could have taken care of this part of it.
No. That's just the trial
lasted 3 weeks and the jury deliberated. So we went through that. Nichols was later found guilty. Many witnesses and people involved in the case ended up dead. So here we go.
Wow.
This is a good part of the film. There are a few people that do end up dead in very questionable circumstances.
From food poisoning?
Let's take the case of Terrence. Worse than that. Let's take the case of Terrence Yakey as described in the film. Yakey was a 7-year veteran of the Oklahoma City Police Department. He was interrupted from a traffic ticket the morning of the bombing. He was he was one of the first people on the scene. He was noted as pulling the first person out of the building. So
hold on. He was interrupted from a traffic ticket?
He was riding a traffic ticket, and the bomb went off, and he dropped his pad, and he ran over to the...
That guy must have been happy. The guy who was getting the ticket, he must have said, yeah, man, thank God, and then he ran the fuck out.
I guess it wasn't, as long as it wasn't two Middle Eastern-looking men in a brown pickup truck.
Right.
But it wasn't. So,
right.
So he let them go. He was noted as pulling the first person out of the building, so he was a hero.
Right.
Yakey must have noticed something in the building that morning and become troubled by what he saw.
Mm.
He reportedly started to compile evidence of the events, which wasn't smart for Mr. Yakey. Upon attempting to file away boxes of this information in a storage facility, Yakey was brutally murdered and left in a field. No alcohol or drugs were found in his system, although he suffered from a brutal beating, slashing of both wrists, and an execution-style shooting. His death was ruled a suicide.
Why do they always... go right away to drugs and alcohol as if that's the only way or reason that you can get shot and killed execution style.
Because they want to criminalize you and people.
Yeah, but how about fucking somebody's wife?
That you're out there causing trouble.
I'm saying, how about screwing somebody's wife? You know what I mean?
Instead of the drugs and alcohol?
Yeah, that's more prominent nowadays.
Because the drugs and alcohol, those are mind alterants.
Huh.
So you can't really fight that. Say, you know. Let's keep going. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I guess.
So the other is a situation. One is a substance that alters our chemistry.
But I think societally we think, well, there must have been drugs and alcohol involved, meaning he must have been shysty.
Nobody could do anything sober, right?
No, I'm saying if he's murdered, right, technically.
Right. Oh, he was definitely murdered.
Okay, so if he's murdered, then there were no drugs and alcohol. What the hell does that have to do with being murdered is my point.
Right, maybe when they want to rule it a suicide, they want to call it depression or personal problems.
Or just living in Oklahoma because it's a little depressing there.
Well, Oklahoma City's nice.
Is it?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
So there were others who were mistaken for alleged bombers and were killed. Watch the film. You got to check it out. So there were a few others, and it's quite intense information.
I saw various parts of the film. I wasn't able to sit down and watch. You can't watch it for free, I don't think. You have to actually rent it.
You do have to purchase it.
Yeah,
but
purchase it
is a great film. Now, let's quickly look at Timothy McVeigh. So those are a lot of the accounts in the opening of the film. So let's look quickly at Timothy McVeigh himself, the government's lone bomber, so to speak. So Timothy McVeigh was a veteran of the first Gulf War. He was awarded the Bronze Star and wished to further his career by moving into the Special Forces. Although it is up to some conjecture, McVeigh allegedly voluntarily resigned from the Special Forces training, citing he was physically unable to complete it. Other reports have him not leaving the military, but entering a black ops or secret operation to infiltrate suspected right-wing or neo-Nazi organizations. That would be the Operation PATCON that we were discussing, Patriot right. Conspiracy. That was a program of our federal government in the early 90s to eradicate, destroy all known Patriot or militia and neo-Nazi groups. So they wanted to get rid of all of them. Now, I have to stress, that not all of these so-called groups are extreme right, so to speak.
I was just going to ask you, militia, neo-Nazis, or racist, or bad?
No, they weren't all extreme right, they weren't all racist, or even operating illegally, but our government decided it was time to stop the militia movement, stop the Patriot movement, stop this.
What is the militia and Patriot movement if they're not Nazis, neo-Nazis, racist, or negative, or extreme right people?
Militias are voluntary guard. Mm-hmm. Outfits, actually. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are used for many things in certain states, and they're sanctioned by states.
But when you say voluntary guard, is
emergency
there like a,
relief,
like a training? Do they have to go to some sort of training, or do people just say, "Hey"?
I imagine. Possibly, depending on which militia we're speaking
of.
But
a group of
militias
people
are,
decide to
it was
take
the,
it
our
upon.
Original, our government, or our country's original armies. Our protection
were
militias. But they've been, bastardized into these neo-Nazi groups.
Normal citizens from turning and defending themselves against the government.
Right. I imagine the government does not want people to think that they are not in control and that you are,
need to be protecting yourself with arms and weapons.
Right. I feel that our government kind of wants to move on from those patriotic ways and uh-huh. wants to get to a more uh-huh. globalist consumerist identity.
Can't we all just get along, just drink the Kool-Aid?
I wish we could all get along, but that is becoming less apparent.
No, but I mean, that's the government, like the underlining. Can't we all just get along? Just please just drink the Kool-Aid. Don't ask any questions.
Right.
Just keep moving.
Nothing to see here. Yeah,
right. Sure. Everything's okay. The Yankees won, right? Okay, cool. Keep moving.
Right. So we went through the. So there's no. They were all not extreme rights, not all races. It was told that McVeigh was distraught after the siege on the Branch Davidian compound in Waco. So he was so distraught that he allegedly began a crusade to strike back. This was when he was allegedly seen making his way into a racist camp called Elohim City. So this is one of these extreme right groups or so-called extreme right groups.
But he also became an advocate or pro for the right to bear arms.
And he worked in a lot of gun shops and
gun shows. He went to a lot of gun shows, like in fairs and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So he became proactive in citizens' right to bear arms.
Sure, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
No.
So Elohim City was a racist encampment. So this wasn't really a militia. It was a racist encampment in Adair County, Oklahoma.
So like a white supremacist camp?
Oh, for sure. This one was indeed. It was overrun by FBI agents and informants. So this was actually run by a lot of the
posing as neo-Nazis and white supremacists.
PATCON infiltrators.
So wait a minute. There were no Puerto Ricans, no Latinos in that camp?
Oh, it was mixed races, man.
Mixed?
You know what? When you say that, that's very interesting because neo-Nazi groups are commonly mixed race.
Really?
I mean, I don't know if they have African Americans, but I do know that they do commonly.
Well, Dave Chappelle was a blind black KKK member, so I'm pretty sure. Because how could you tell under those sheets?
Well, you never know. It's all in the sentiment. It's all in the heart.
In the heart, right.
So on the FBI, one of the FBI agents, McVeigh, was known to come in contact. So Elohim City was a racist encampment. One of the FBI agents McVeigh was known to come in contact with was Carol Howe. Carol Howe infiltrated the group and with a known German intelligence officer named Andreas Straussmeier.
Mm.
Straussmeier and Howe then worked with McVeigh and Nichols to plan, build, and detonate the bomb. Listen to this one.
The ATF had placed informant Carol Howe into a white separatist community in eastern Oklahoma called Elohim City. Another ATF agent admitted under oath that one suspect, Andy Straussmeier, was reported to make, quote, threats to blow up federal buildings, unquote, before the Oklahoma City bombing. Furthermore, Carol Howe actually drove Straussmeier and other suspects to Oklahoma City to scout bombing targets. Was this the source of the ATF's suspicious behavior the morning of April 19th?
Well, so, you know, there you go. So that's from the film. And they're laying out how this Carol Howe worked with McVeigh and Nichols to plan, build, and detonate the bomb. Strausmeier installed a warfare and apocalyptic mentality into Elohim City. In the end, Strausmeier was smuggled out of the country through Mexico by a known former CIA agent and taken back to Germany. It seems the government infiltrates these groups, then turns young impressionable people into killing machines or classic patsies. McVeigh's lawyer also consulted with a known mind control expert, Julian West. Look this guy up. He's real creepy. Known as the number two mind control expert in North America and psychological warfare expert.
Mind control expert. Yeah, that sounds like my mom.
He had previously been consultant and psychiatrist for Patty Hearst, Sirhan, and Jack Ruby.
So wow.
It's an interesting group, right?
Wow.
McVeigh also wrote a letter. This is interesting. He also wrote a letter to his sister where he stated he was chosen from special ops to infiltrate militia groups and other, you know, right-wing groups. He also wrote a letter to the attorney general at the time, John Ashcroft, who is a major 9/11 conspirator. Mm-hmm. McVeigh invited Ashcroft to come see him. He said he had some information for him and he would divulge new information in the case, and Ashcroft declined. Again, remember, McVeigh's occupation on his death certificate is the U.S. Army. So that's so highly questionable within itself. A few more great points, just to see if we can get through them. From the film, regarding the strength of the bomb, the officials reported the strength and ingredients of the ANFO bomb, which was fertilizer and oil or gas, basically, fuel.
Right.
The bomb had changed many times. The power of the bomb had changed from 1,200 to 2,400 to 4,800. They had to account for the total destruction of the bomb. And in their own tests, they were never able to do so. They could not replicate the brisance or shattering power of the bomb.
Right.
The test was conducted by Wright Laboratories at Eglin Air Force Base. They found their weaker structure was not destroyed by a more powerful bomb than was used in the Oklahoma City bombing. So they couldn't even build a bomb the dimensions that McVeigh's bomb allegedly, up a weaker structure.
Right. So the damage was highly
inconsistent with the truck bomb.
In other words, there's actual diagrams that depict the power that the actual bomb could have affected, what area. And basically, the amount of firepower, bomb, explosive power that was in Tim McVeigh's truck was not sufficient enough to blast that whole chunk of the building. It's just not physically possible.
Right.
That plus the fact...
The blast had to turn corners to do the damage it did. And there was also a large crater in the rear of the building that was unsubstantiated by any bomb.
But plus there's the evidence of the actual news reports and people reporting that there were two undetonated bombs.
We heard the clips.
Correct. And other people saying that they had heard bombs or felt bombs or explosions prior to the Tim McVeigh truck bomb.
The governor tells us in his own words that there are bombs being taken out of the building.
Right.
It's unbelievable.
Yep.
So one of the signatures of an ANFO bomb is a poisonous cloud of ammonia gas. First responders and victims would have definitely suffered from this gas had it been present, but no gas was present directly after the bombing, pointing to it possibly not being ANFO at all.
Right.
And just some sort of super bomb. Another interesting thing in the film, General Parton, a 30-year Air Force veteran in research and development, examined the evidence and came to the conclusion that the strength of the bomb would not have caused the splitting of the columns, that this could only be the result of placing explosives directly onto the columns.
Right.
And that more than one explosive device had to be used. And, those prior clips, obviously there was more than one. Again, like 9/11, new terrorist legislation was passed as a result. The Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act of 1996, which is about habeas corpus, what we kind of described. This really is just the tip of the iceberg. I urge you to watch film there. There's so much more that can be found and questioned to this official story. Mm-hmm. It takes us, in this film, what the people of Oklahoma had to do, the local government, was form an independent investigation committee. And they call that the OKBIC, or the Oklahoma Bombing Investigative Committee. And it was formed by a local Oklahoma State Rep, Charles Key. This was a good guy politician who was more interested in getting to the truth than furthering his political career. After he received requests from his constituents to look into the OKC bombing, it seemed to Key that there was an effort to change the report from the initial days of the bombing. So they organized this they organized this committee. The OKBIC was formed from only one reason only, and to find the truth that the federal government wouldn't respond to the Oklahoma City bombing with a full congressional investigation. So if I didn't make sense there, they formed this because they wouldn't take it to the congressional level. So they
because the evidence, the stories, the information just didn't jive.
Right.
And the government would not comply, the congressional government would not comply with you know, investigating further. I mean, like, they're like, no, we don't have to investigate. Don't worry about it. Well, we're telling you, this is the way it is. Just keep it moving, so to speak.
Right.
Which is, you know, this is not original stuff. No. I mean, maybe this is the first time that the United States of America is affected in such a large scale from a terrorist point of view. Right? From an accusatory homegrown terrorist.
That was the key.
The same thing happened in 9/11 where, you know, all of a sudden people were saying, wait a minute. How could the plane hit in those buildings perfectly fall like a domino effect? Listen, when you look at the 9/11, the World Trade Center site, and you look at, there are buildings completely surrounding that whole area, okay?
Right.
Very, 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 very little damage is done. Like, very little damage was done. Those towers came down. Anyway, you know, it's not the first time that this stuff, you know, people want to know, and there's a lot of cock blocking by the government.
Right. So after compiling evidence, they tried to assemble a county grand jury, this OKBIC, to look at the evidence and information and hopefully lead to that congressional investigation. They gathered 12,000 signatures needed, getting the funding and opportunity to set up the grand jury, to Key's, surprise. The government then turned the grand jury over to Key's political rivals, Bob Macy. So this guy, Macy, then turned the investigation on the OKBIC. He turned it on them and started investigating the individual members. The OKBIC went forward and assembled the information. The members were under constant surveillance during the participation. So the findings of this the Oklahoma Bombing Investigation Committee is published in a book, and that was released months prior to 9/11. And you got to take a look at that. It's incredible information. But I do have a few of the points, if I can try to get through them, a few of the things that they found that the Rep Charles Key from Oklahoma actually found.
You can get through it.
So let's take a look here. So they found, consider the following facts which caused Mr. Key to become more initially concerned. So number one, the initial APB, we went through that, was for Middle Eastern, the John Doe and a Brown pickup truck, of course. The Jordanian brought back from London who had... apparent bomb-making materials in his suitcase and other John Doe suspects who were described as Middle Eastern. Now, this information will be quite more in-depth than what we've shared, but listen to this stuff. So, fact two, those Middle Eastern reports quickly vanished. Why? Fact number three, the 1,200-pound ammonium nitrate bomb grew from 1,200 to 2,400 to 4,800. Very questionable. The early reports told us about explosives inside the Murrow Building. Remember how the rescue efforts were put on hold while the bomb squad entered the building to search for and take out those intentionally placed internal explosives. Then those reports were described in detail by local U.S. congressmen and bomb experts interviewed in the studio by the media. Fact number five, those reports also disappeared or were explained away as dummy for show items. Very questionable. Those who dared oppose the revisionist news accounts were ostracized, mocked, discredited, dark cornered, etc. I know I was one who dared to be politically incorrect. Fact number seven, the ATF, of course, that's Mr. Key's words. This is a letter that he wrote to the, you know, to the public to kind of share this information. So this is worded from his first person. Fact number seven, the ATF had field agents assigned to the office at the Murrow Building, yet on the day of the bombing, not one of those agents were killed. They were mysteriously, uncharacteristically absent from the building that morning. There are witness testimony to actually people being, ATF agents being warned on their pagers not to show up for work that day.
I think they were tweeted to, like, stay home.
Maybe, man. Yeah. Oh, it was before tweeting. 95.
No. Oh, no, no.
The government had the tweet.
Oh, no. Tweeting, you know, just because tweeting came out a few years ago, that doesn't mean the tweeting capabilities weren't in effect. Trust me.
I got you.
There were people tweeting out there.
You're right. So at some point it became, these are in his words again, at some point it became painfully apparent that there was more wrong than right with the federal investigation. This is when I had a very tough decision to make. Should I sit and do nothing and remain in my comfort zone, simply playing the part of the caring politician for the photo ops, or should I really do the right thing, even if it meant giving the phrase politically incorrect a whole new dimension? And I urge any truth seeker to ask themselves that question, and please have Mr. Key's result of actually stepping into that action position. So let's read a little more here. We have a little more time. People in powerful positions, this is from Mr. Key himself in the letter, people in powerful positions have repeatedly attacked those of us who have been scrutinizing the federal investigation. Oklahoma Governor Frank Keating was a formal FBI agent himself and spent most of his career in the services of federal departments of the Treasury, Justice, and HUD, you know, other parts of the government. At one time in his career, his responsibilities included the overseeing of the ATF and other federal law enforcement. That connects him deeply. Government Keating went so far as to say, raising questions. Now, check this out, Nestor. So Government Keating went on to say, raising questions would not bring one whit of intelligence to this process. How could a governor say that? He later escalated his attack, saying, those of us who were raising serious questions were howling at the moon and off the reservation.
That's what I'm saying.
We're all crazy for questioning anything.
But that's what I'm saying. Just, keep it moving. The Yankees won. Everything's good.
All right.
Don't worry about it. Don't ask questions. Drink the Kool-Aid. Yo, America the best. Never forget.
Go Yankees.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's just see if we can get through a little more of this. So there's a gentleman by the name of Glenn Wilburn who had lost two grandchildren in the tragedy. Him and I filed a petition in November 1995 to have a local county grand jury impaneled to investigate the bombing. This independent grand jury would be fully autonomous of the federal investigation and would double in the capacity of a watchdog federal investigation. So it just goes on and on. I urge you to read this letter from Mr. Keyes, Oklahoma State Rep. Key, and his findings in the investigation. And it goes on to divulge a lot of interesting things, like six different individuals have come forward and reported seeing the bomb squad in the immediate vicinity at the Murrow Building early on the morning of the bombing. The Oklahoma City Fire Department received a call from the FBI the Friday before the bombing and was told to be on the alert for a possible terrorist attack on a government building. Bruce Shaw, who had frantically come to look for his wife inside the smoldering building, was told by an FBI agent, you won't find any ATF agents in the building because they were warned on their pagers not to come in this morning and they are now being debriefed. This conversation was corroborated by his boss, who accompanied Bruce to find his wife. Carol Howe, a paid informant, we heard from her, for the ATF has recently come forward to confirm that she informed the ATF that two individuals, Dennis Mahon and Andreas Strassmeyer, were planning to bomb the federal building in Oklahoma City. She also said that the likely date for the bombing was April 19th. So to make this even more clear, the federal grand jury wanted to interview both the eyewitness and the sketch artist who drew the John Doe composites, but they were flatly refused by federal authorities. Clearly, they were blatantly deprived of their basic constitutional rights as grand jurors. So that letter goes on and on, and I urge everybody to look into
that. April 19th, they wanted to make sure that everybody paid their taxes first by the tax due date, and then we can carry on with our shenanigans.
Right. So the coincidences to 9/11 in Oklahoma City, now that I urge you to watch the film A Noble Lie. It is a great film if you want to get caught up on the Oklahoma City bombing and independent investigations.
Not just those two.
What?
The bombing of Pearl Harbor, which I hope that we can... there are a lot of similarities.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, how many people...
How many
people off the top of your head actually died as a result of the attacks on Pearl Harbor?
Pearl Harbor itself, I do not have those numbers in my head.
Well, we're gonna investigate that, hopefully.
But the coincidences to 9/11 and Oklahoma City is ridiculous. Bill Clinton asked us to never forget, just like 9/11, in his speech at the memorial. Mm-hmm. No key figures in the ATF were killed. 200 videos confiscated and copied for federal agents allegedly show the bombing never given to people or never given to the public, just like 9/11. Rubble from the OKC bombing was guarded by the FBI. No independent investigations on the rubble. It was destroyed a month later and buried after the feds decided it was too dangerous to continue, just like 9/11. Critical documents, listen to this one. Critical documents regarding the Clinton-Whitewater investigations and the Mena, Arkansas and Lassiter Ranch drug running cases, which is part of the Contra scandal there.
Right.
They were all those files were destroyed in the Murrow Building.
Because we don't need them.
Clinton moved them. to the Murrow Building. These documents were moved to the Murrow Building months prior to the bombing. Like many documents at World Trade Center 7 that related to Enron were destroyed and gone.
Also, so they did a massive paper shredding.
You tell me.
Hey, that's a pretty effective way to do it.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
So major terrorism and death penalty laws were enacted as a result, just like 9/11 and the Patriot Act and now the NDAA. That interesting call into the Executive Secretariat Office of the Justice Department in Washington said that the Murrow Building had been bombed. That was 20 seconds after the blast.
Mm.
Well, no, pardon me. That was 20 minutes before the blast. I had that wrong on my notes. Goodness sake. Can you imagine getting the call? Oh, they're going to blow up the building. 20 minutes later, it blows up.
We are walking into another dimension.
No actions were taken from the phone call. Or maybe they couldn't. They didn't have time to do
it. A dimension not only of sight and sound, but of mind.
Wow. Very good.
You unlocked the door with the key of imagination.
All right. So check this out. So that was the BBC Jane Stanley reporting the collapse of World Trade Center 7. We all know that, where she's reporting it being collapsed, and it is behind her. Shoulders still standing, so she got the pre-collapse information a little early.
That's crazy shit.
That is.
Hey, I just want to say one thing. My mother used to slap me in the head with a flip flop whenever I left my books at home.
Wow, I'm bringing a flip flop.
Yeah, and she used to say, "Never forget." So that's forgot my damn books. Trust me.
Well, good. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm bringing a flip flop next week. So what does this all mean? Let me just try to sum this up. This is real quick. So what does it all mean when you put it all together? Our government in the 90s drew a line in the sand with the so-called Patriot militia and right-wing movements. To gain public support for this effort, they used the media to define these groups as neo-Nazi gun-running potential terrorists, or as they love to describe them, the far right. When you sum up the bombing, the federal government allegedly used and coerced a patsy to blow up the building with a truck bomb that allegedly assisted the patsy at every step up to the point delivery and detonation and the murder of 168 people, including 19 children. Listen, folks, there is no right or left. That's my personal opinion. That is the illusion that our government offers two choices, two colors, two sides of the chessboard. Let any third party come into the picture and they'll both strike them to the ground. That's how I feel. Sum it up, Nestor, what do you think, man?
Well, I think a lot of things. But
I don't think this is a right or left issue. I don't believe in left or right. We should think outside of those boxes. But what do you think,
man? Well, there are motives, again. You know, there are motives.
There are always motives to a crime.
There are motives. There are people who are willing to drink Kool-Aid and not ask, you know, believe the status quo, whatever.
Right.
Right. And there are powers that be that have agendas.
Right.
And let's face it, you know, when you have a lot of power and you want more power, you have money, you want more money. I believe you stop at nothing to get what you want. And nothing means nothing. You know what I mean? It's not some of it. It's nothing.
Right.
You know,
and by and large, you know, the break yourself out of that right or left thinking. It limits your access to cognitive thought and enslaves you to whatever party's groupthink you identify with. But Nestor, you know what? It was great to go over this film today. I appreciate it.
Real quick.
Okay, you got about 10 seconds.
Yeah. At the end of the day, though, this whole thing that 9/11 is about what? Taking away your privacy, your freedoms, and everything gradually, not all in one shot.
Right. Gradually.
Little by little, you'll have a video camera up your ass and everybody will know your every move.
Right.
No pun intended.
Right. And that's where it's headed.
That's where it's headed.
So thanks for joining me today. Hopefully we did service to the noble lie. Please see the film. It is amazing by director James Lane. You will enjoy that information for the truth that it provides, not for the victimization or the poor children who had to die. So thank you for joining us today on the Devil's in the Details radio show. Please join us next week. We'll see you next week.
never one day handed me a cigarette and said, "Is that okay?" I said, "Devil wanna be a rock star, play my music in the real fine bar." I said, "Okay." I said, "Sonny, now take my hand, I wanna lead you to the promised land." I said, "Okay." "Hey, devil, what do I owe?" He said, "You don't know nothing but your morals." So I said, "Okay."